The words 20th Century Fox are carved into a golden monolith, with searchlights sweeping across it. A Leonard Goldberg production. A Joseph Rubin film. Starring Julia Roberts, Patrick Bergin, Kevin Anderson. Film title, Sleeping with the Enemy. With Elizabeth Lawrence, Kyle Secor. Music composed and conducted by Jerry Goldsmith. Casting by Karen Ray. Costume designer, Richard Hornung. Film editor, George Bowers. Production designer, Doug Craner. In a beach scene that's bathed in red light, a flock of silhouetted seabirds are hovering close to the shoreline, where a woman is crouching by a basket in the shallows. She stands up and starts feeling the sand with her bare feet. The light changes, bathing the scene in more natural golden hues. The woman is in her 20s, with long, thick auburn hair that's tied back in a ponytail, and a heavy fringe that frames her pretty heart-shaped face. With a hooked fork, she digs a clam out of the sand, then places it with the others in her basket. A man in a long dark coat is making his way along the beach towards her, based upon the novel by Nancy Price, screenplay by Ronald Bass. The man stops in front of her. He has brown hair, a moustache, and is wearing a suit.
Morning, Laura.
She smiles.
I like a man who dresses for clamming.
Business. And on our vacation. Do you forgive me?
How about these? Aren't they beautiful? Thought I could see them for starters. Would your bra?
I told the Blanchards we'd do their stupid party. All your hard work. I'll call them and cancel.
No. I can just dig fresh ones tomorrow.
I missed you this morning.
He kisses her on the lips, then draws her into his arms. She accidentally dirties his suit.
Look what I've done.
No problem. I've time to change.
He wanders away, wiping the front of his suit with his hand, and she watches him go with a wistful smile. Now it's nighttime, and the man, Martin, is standing looking out from the balcony of their contemporary-looking spacious house, its facade dominated by large windows. Inside, Laura is getting ready to go out in the elegant bedroom. Her hair neatly pinned back and wearing a white dress, she sits down at her dressing table and applies some pale pink lipstick. Martin appears, reflected in the mirror behind her.
That's a pretty dress. I wouldn't have thought of it.
You're thinking the red?
Black, actually.
Well, it's backless. Could be chilly tonight.
Later, they arrive at the party. She's wearing the backless black dress. Her hair hangs loose.
Good to see you.
They make their way through the busy room. Later, Martin turns away from a group he's standing with and casts his gaze around the party. When he catches Laura's eye, she smiles at him and he subtly beckons her with a tilt of his head. She peels away from the people she's with and climbs up some steps by the poolside to join him.
Have I been social long enough?
For the whole season.
Later, they escape the blustery night outside and step into the house. Laura takes off her long cream coat.
Are you hungry?
Yeah.
As she goes to the refrigerator and takes out a bowl of strawberries, he picks up a Berlioz CD and puts it on. He grabs her from behind, startling her and making her drop the bowl. She turns around so she can return his demanding, passionate kisses. Now, a telescope sits by a window looking out onto a beautiful caramel sunrise. A flock of birds on the beach is disturbed. Inside their home gym, Martin is working out on a vertical cross trainer wearing just a pair of shorts and sneakers. He's oblivious to Laura, standing behind him, watching him with an inscrutable expression. His body is glistening with sweat and he's wearing an expression of intense concentration. Later, he's at the bathroom sink when he notices three white hand towels with identical horizontal lines on a rail at the side. He turns off the tap and heads over. The middle towel's lines are not level with the others. Soon after, he finds Laura, wearing just a shirt, sitting on the balcony outside. He embraces her from behind.
Come with me.
He gently leads her inside.
Isn't it a little early for this?
Without responding, he pulls her through the spacious lounge and into the bathroom.
Everything in here as it should be?
She instantly straightens the towels.
I don't know why I forgot.
Well, we all forget things. That's what reminding is for.
Thank you.
She smiles, then turns and walks out. Waves lap gently into shore next to the isolated beach house. Inside the kitchen, Laura is drying a bowl with a towel. Her expression is preoccupied and troubled. She goes over to a food cupboard and opens the doors. Inside, she hurriedly straightens any cans or jars whose labels are not precisely aligned. Her eyes dart over the contents of the cupboard until she's satisfied everything is in its correct place. She closes the cupboard and starts drying the bowl again.
What's for supper?
Lamb with rosemary and the peach chutney. New potatoes and baby peas.
Sounds great.
I was going to make some of that herb bread that you like so much.
I can hardly wait.
He walks off, and she watches him as he crosses the beach, heading towards a yacht that's anchored in a small mooring not far from the house. A man is working on the sails in the sunshine. With one hand in his trouser pocket, Martin strolls along the wooden jetty towards the boat.
You renting from the Driscolls?
Hi.
Yeah.
John Fleischman. I guess we must be neighbors.
Martin, Bernie. We live up there.
Oh, so that must be your wife that I keep seeing staring down from the window.
Laura.
You're a lucky man. I've been admiring your house. It's one of the best on Cape Cod.
Thanks. You're from Boston?
Yeah, I've escaped from Mass General. I'm a neurologist there.
You live in Boston, too. I'm an investment counselor. This is a terrific-looking boat. Boats are a passion of mine, one I don't get to indulge very often.
Oh, that's too bad. I would never let anything keep me off the water.
My wife doesn't like sailing. She can't swim. She nearly drowned when she was a child. I usually try to get her on a boat at least once a season. It's difficult, but I try.
Well, listen, I'm going to be taking a run up the coast this evening. It's full moon. Weather's supposed to be great. Maybe this would be...
I'll raise a chance.
Okay.
Thanks.
With a friendly handshake, Martin heads off. Back in the house, Laura is carefully arranging delicate white flowers in a vase when he returns.
Nice looking man, the doctor.
Doctor?
He says I have a beautiful house. Best on the beach. When was he in here? Yesterday. yesterday while I was in town?
Martin, I don't know the doctor.
Sure you do. Young, good-looking, outfitting his sailboat down there. He says you've been staring at him from the window all day.
He punches her to the floor.
Does it give you that much pleasure to humiliate me? Stop it!
He kicks her violently. He crouches beside her.
Now you'll sulk, won't you?
No.
Yes, you will.
No, I won't.
You'll pout and spoil our supper. Our beautiful supper. Just smell the bread. I'm so sorry. Will you smile?
Now sitting up, she remains passive as he kisses her.
Your doctor friend. He asked us to go sailing tonight. Just a run along the coast. Less than an hour each way. I'll be right there, Princess. Right by your side. I know how you feel, but we can't conquer our fears by running away. Do it. For me.
He places a finger on her lips, then moves away.
I think I'll run into town. Anything you need?
She shakes her head.
I'll be back.
As soon as he's gone, her face crumples, and she reaches up to touch her bloodied forehead. Wincing with pain and unsteady, she struggles to her feet, but has to use the back of the chair for support. Trying to hold herself together, she goes over to the vase of flowers that she dropped when he hit her. She kneels on the black lacquered floor and starts picking up the pieces. Laura is standing on the beach, staring out at the waves rushing into shore. She's now wearing a pale blue cardigan over a white dress. A strong breeze stirs the grasses on the sand. Her arms are folded in front of her, and her expression is pained and contemplative. After a long moment, she turns and walks slowly back up the beach. Approaching some wooden steps, she stops when she notices a lamppost that has a sign for the town beach area attached to it. She bends down for a pebble and then throws it at the light. One bulb smashes and falls. Then she throws another stone, but it misses its mark. Her third pebble finds its target, taking out the second bulb. Then she trots up the wooden steps towards her house. Laura's sitting looking pensive when Martin comes in.
Bonjour, madame.
She shuts her eyes with dread.
You all alone in here?
He presents her with a bouquet of red roses, which she barely looks at.
They're beautiful.
She forces a smile.
I'm sorry we quarreled.
He hands her a gift-wrapped box and moves away. She opens it up, then pulls back some tissue paper to reveal a slinky red dress inside.
You don't like it, I can...
No, I do.
He takes her by the hand, then pulls her towards him for a kiss. When she wraps her arms around his neck, he reaches behind and unzips her dress. She flinches, but says nothing as the dress slips to the floor. Then he holds up the red dress, and she obediently lifts up her arms so he can slide it over her head. As he guides the dress down the length of her body, she keeps her arms raised and her expression passive.
Too early in the day for this?
He kisses her firmly on the lips, oblivious to the distaste written on her face. Later in bed, her hand grips hold of a grey satin pillow. The cream sheets further down the bed are crumpled, and clothes are strewn across the floor and over the back of furniture. Martin is on top of Laura, his body thrusting beneath the satin sheets as he kisses her. He climaxes, then his body sags. She closes her eyes with a pained expression. When he finally lifts his head to look at her, a smile instantly spreads across her face, but when he gets up, it disappears again. She turns her back on the room and, resting her face on her arm, looks mournfully out of the large window. The sea is reflected in the dressing table mirror behind her. Moving up and away from the house to reveal the turquoise waters and beautiful coastline in the sunshine outside. Later, dressed in light brown slacks and an ivory blouse, Laura heads out to the terrace, places a dinner plate on the table in front of Martin, then takes a seat opposite.
You want something. I know my princess. I'm waiting.
Mrs. Clark called from the library. She said they could use me full time now.
You already work 3 mornings a week, and I support that, because I know your love of books. What about our home? Don't you love our home as much?
Has your dinner been late to the table even once?
Oh, I can remember. Not so far back it was late. By 2 days.
That was 6 months ago. Martin, my mother was all I had, and I'll never forgive myself for not bringing her here to live with us.
Shouldn't beat yourself. You always treated her with love.
She died, Martin. How could I not go to her funeral?
You had told me, I would have taken you, given me a chance to pay my last respects. But you sneaked off inexplicably.
I didn't sneak off.
Need I remind you how I worried?
No. You reminded me enough the night I came back.
You aren't suggesting I enjoy that.
Oh, God, no. That would make you a monster.
If I didn't know you better, I might think you were deliberately provoking a quarrel so you'd be unable to sail tonight. Now, this is a useful discussion, but one best postponed until after our sail. Don't you think?
She won't meet his eye. Martin holds up his plate, and she takes it and begins serving up the food that's on the table. Later, dressed for sailing, Laura's hand trails across a dark bronze sculpture of an African head. Martin comes in with a coat for her and disturbs her contemplation.
Thinking of our honeymoon? The night I gave you that? The night I taught you to dance?
Those were the happiest days of my whole life.
He turns her around to face him.
We will always be together. Nothing can keep us apart. It's time to go.
As he leads her outside, she glances nervously over her shoulder. Now it's almost dark, and the sailboat is bobbing violently on the choppy sea. Martin sits holding onto the side, whilst behind him, Laura's face is set in restrained panic. Standing between them, John Fleischmann is at the helm, steering the vessel through the inky black water. Only a few small lights on the sails and the deck penetrate the gloomy twilight. Thick black clouds scud across a brilliant full moon.
I wish that moon would come back. We're okay.
Laura gives John a faint smile, then closes her eyes. A flash of lightning bathes her in electric blue light.
Shit. Well, so much for weather reports.
I thought you said the weather would be fine.
Yeah. I don't know where this is coming from. We're gonna turn back. Prepare to come about.
As the storm rages all around, the boat veers dramatically and performs a U-turn around a buoy.
Go
Princess. Nothing to worry about.
Near Laura's feet, the boat is starting to fill up with water. She sits, soaked to the skin, trembling with fear. Through the driving rain, John squints as he keeps his eyes fixed on the boat's course.
There's that first buoy! We're almost home now!
Looking scared to death, she closes her eyes. The wind catches one of the sails.
Tighten the jib! Crank it in!
Martin cranks the winch handle to bring in the jib, but the line comes free, making the large white sail flap out of control in the strong winds.
Martin, go try and bring down the jib!
As Martin struggles towards the front of the boat, he slips on the wet surface. John goes to help him, but he also slips.
Hold on, hold on!
They try to get hold of the ropes.
I've got it!
Laura watches them with concern.
Hang about. Keep pulling! Keep pulling! I've got it! Stay on board!
Both men finally manage to get hold of the rope and with all their might start pulling the jib towards them. The wheel is spinning out of control. Then the jib turns suddenly and pushes Martin overboard. He manages to grip onto the side ropes before John grabs his hand.
Hold on! I got you! I got you!
Martin hauls himself back on board.
Laura!
She's disappeared.
Laura! She can't swim! Laura! 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 Laura!
As Martin shines a torch onto the water, John gets hold of a flare gun.
Laura! Laura!
A flare erupts into the night sky. Now, from the inky black waters, someone seems to be watching a Coast Guard's boat.
We've got to have another boat and a helicopter. Get back on the radio, please.
Martin and the crew hurry onto the deck to see what's been found. It's Laura's blue life jacket. Wrapped in a blanket, Martin stares at it in stunned disbelief. Later, Martin lets himself into the house. He turns on a light. Moving further into the room, he notices the African bronze Laura was looking at earlier. His hand trails down its long pointed headdress, then curls around its sculpted impassive face as he picks it up. He walks slowly through the room, studying it closely, his eyes never leaving its face. He catches his reflection in the window and loses control. He sends the bronze flying through the glass, shattering the entire pane. Then Martin steps through onto the balcony beyond.
Laura!
Thrown into silhouette by the dim light emanating from the house, he stands facing the pitch-black night. Now, a sunny day, mourners are gathered on a hillside overlooking the ocean.
We shall all come together once more, God's gracious love, for the grace, for his promise, that whoever liveth, liveth in me, shall never die. Amen.
A small group moves away from the graveside. Wearing dark glasses, Martin remains where he is, staring at a framed photo of his wife that sits on top of her black marble headstone. The name Laura Burney is engraved in gold lettering, and her image is surrounded by white lilies and freesia. As the mourners finally disperse, Martin cuts the solitary figure, standing on the empty cliffside. Now, a flashback to the night of the storm, moments after Laura's disappearance. A short distance from the boat, Laura is clinging to a buoy, bathed in its macabre red light.
That was the night that I died, and someone else was saved.
Now from Laura bobbing up and down with the buoy, to her swimming in a public pool.
Someone who was afraid of water, but learned to swim.
Her fellow classmates egg her on.
Someone who knew there would be one moment when he wouldn't be watching. Someone who knew that the darkness from the broken lights would show the way.
From the water, she sees that the bulbs she smashed earlier have left a dark gap in the series of streetlights. She swims towards it. Later, she emerges from the sea, struggling to stay upright. She stumbles in the shallows, and rippling white spumy waves wash over her. Lying on her front, she levers herself up and starts to crawl. Now she's scrambling down the slope towards her house, wearing just a white vest and panties. Inside, a dripping wet Laura quickly passes through the living room. In her bedroom, she stands on a table to retrieve a bag that's hidden on a concealed shelf just below the ceiling. She opens it. Inside is a roll of cash, some white plimsolls, and a pair of jeans, which she hurriedly pulls on. Next, she snips off a handful of her long hair and flushes it down the toilet. In front of a mirror, she pulls on a black bobbed wig, then ruffles it to make it look natural. Next, after a bit of a struggle, she finally manages to pull off her gold wedding band. She looks at it for a moment before flushing it down the toilet as well. Soon after, she's wiping the floor to remove any trace that she's been there. Driving rain hammers at a window of a departing coach, inside which Laura sits looking somberly out into the stormy night. Now in sunny daylight, the coach crosses a bridge. Asleep by the window, Laura's head lolls into the shoulder of a bearded man sitting next to her, and she wakes up. Ignoring his pleasantry, she sits up stiffly and turns away. The coach continues on through the countryside, passing by a lake. As night falls, an older woman across the aisle eating an apple offers one to Laura.
Don't you like green? I don't have a red one left. I got plenty.
Okay. With a grateful smile, Laura takes the apple.
You visiting out here?
My mom's by herself in a nursing home. She's blind and can't move her left side very well. She had a stroke.
Sorry to hear that. You live back east?
I was visiting an old friend. She needed me.
Sick, was she? Of course, it's none of my business.
She left her husband. He was a horrible man. He used to beat her.
No.
Started right after their honeymoon. At first he was charming, tender, but it all changed. He said if she left him, he would punish her, and he meant it. His punishments were terrible. He would never let her go so that he could find her anywhere.
Couldn't she call the police?
Well, she did. She called them, And a lawyer, too. They said she could make a citizen's arrest, get a restraining order. It was pathetic.
Well, how did she leave?
She risked everything. Escaped. Started a new life.
As Laura gazes out of the window, the woman watches her.
It's a brave girl.
Laura turns to look at her.
She thinks she's a coward.
A coward? Not a girl like that. How long did you stay with him?
She gives a little sympathetic smile.
Too long. 3 years. 7 months. 6 days. Thank you for the help.
Now in hazy sunshine, the coach passes by a field of golden wheat, then another with brown earth ploughed into neat furrows. Still in the same seat, Laura watches the countryside flit past outside the window. A roadside billboard with a large sweet corn attached welcomes them to Iowa, and her face breaks out in a warm smile. Now the coach turns into a leafy town square, where people are going about their daily business. From the window, Laura sees men chatting in the back of a pickup truck and young girls playing with a skipping rope. She beams at them. A policeman is raising the Stars and Stripes, watched by a man in denim dungarees. The billowing flag is reflected in the window beside Laura's face. Seeing two little girls splashing their feet around in a fountain makes Laura grin. Later, having taken off her wig, she's walking along a suburban street clutching a newspaper. She crosses the tree-lined avenue, where children are out playing, breaking into a trot halfway across. She approaches a traditional white clapboard house, where a neatly dressed woman is standing waiting on the steps. A for rent sign is posted in the garden.
I'm Iris Neffer. So glad you could come today.
Now Iris is showing Laura around the house. The decor is a little old-fashioned.
The house has some great possibilities. I think you'd like it.
Laura pauses in a doorway and surveys a room before crossing the hall to look in another that's filled with furniture covered in dust sheets. Later, Iris steps out onto the porch, followed by Laura.
How much is it again?
$700, plus first and last month's deposit, Miss Walters.
Waters. $700. I'm gonna take it.
Good.
Laura hands over some cash. Later, she opens some curtains, sending dust flying everywhere. Then in the lounge, she removes the white sheets covering the old-fashioned chairs, creating even more dust. She looks at a green wicker rocking chair with interest. Now standing on a chair in the hallway, she's running a broom over the wooden spindles of the staircase. Later, Laura is painting the kitchen. Wearing a headscarf and an old shirt, she concentrates hard on the task in hand, freshening up the dowdy green cupboards with a pale butter yellow. It's daytime, and Laura arrives back home carrying a tray of plants and a brown paper grocery bag, which she deposits on the kitchen table. Moving to the window, she takes out three small pots of primroses and places them in line on the ledge. She places a pink one between two purples, then admires the result. As evening falls, Laura is gently rocking back and forth on a chair swing on her front porch. All around her, the neighborhood is perfectly quiet. Patches of intense golden sunlight are reflected in the windows behind her as she quietly absorbs her new peaceful surroundings. Now Laura's standing in the shower with powerful jets of steaming water soaking her upturned face. She has her eyes closed as she relaxes in the spray. Later, drying her hands, she's about to align three identical towels on the rail, but then realizes what she's doing and scrunches them up. Wearing just a towel, she goes to the bedroom window to investigate the whistling. A guy's fooling around with a hose on the lawn.
When you're a jet, all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day. When you're a jet, you're a...
He twirls around, dancing with a hose. Laura smiles to herself.
Her cylinders are clicking, ba 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 ba, a lousy chicken. Here come the jet, yeah, and we're gonna be, yeah.
She struggles not to laugh at his antics.
You stay up, jet!
He suddenly sees her watching him from the window. She instantly steps to the side, then laughs to herself behind the curtain. The young guy, who has brown hair, a beard and is wearing jeans, carries on hosing in a more subdued fashion. Now, a cold grey light fills Martin and Laura's empty beach house. The bed has been stripped, and there are dust sheets over the furniture. Outside, in the fading daylight, Martin is strolling along the sandy pathway that runs alongside the beach. The line of lampposts that Laura used to guide her to shore are just up ahead of him. He glances out to the ocean as he's passing the one whose bulb she smashed. Having trodden barefoot on the broken glass, he stops to inspect the damage. A sliver of glass has cut into the ball of his foot, making it bleed. He removes it. Then, with his interest piqued, he looks up to the broken lights. At home, Laura's fetching a napkin and candlestick from a food cupboard when she notices some of the boxes and tins are neatly aligned. She immediately messes them up. Later, she's washing up at the sink, her hair loosely tied back. The noise outside makes her look out into the dark garden, where she notices an apple tree swaying in the light breeze. Soon after, Laura's hitched up her skirt to hold all the apples that she's picking off the tree. She takes one last piece of fruit, then turns on her heel, about to walk off.
Harvest time? You know, people get arrested for stealing in this town.
They were on the ground. They're all damaged and bruised.
Bruised?
The guy who was fooling around with the hose earlier picks an apple from her skirt.
Hmm. Okay, well, not that one.
He takes a peek at the other apples she's holding.
They all look pretty good to me. It's not an awful trespass, you know.
It's just a few apples to bake a pie.
A pie? Well, why don't you say so? Maybe we can make a deal. I love pie.
I don't make deals.
She lets the apples drop to the ground and walks off. Later, she's peeling one in her kitchen. Frowning, she goes to the back door, where the guy is standing cradling apples in his jumper.
You forgot these. It's a shame to let them rot on the ground. They're really great for baking. Hey, look, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to scare you.
She puts down the knife she was using for peeling and nervously approaches him.
I'm sorry. Come on in.
She opens the screen door for him and he steps inside. When he puts the apples down on the table, they roll everywhere.
So, hi, my name's Ben Woodward. That was me the other day. On the lawn.
I know.
You caught me by surprise up there.
So I gathered.
I didn't realize anybody had moved in. If I'd known, I would have rehearsed a little.
You're pretty good.
Oh, yeah? You liked it?
It brought back a memory. My mom took me to that show when I was a little girl.
I love that show. I had directed it last semester. I teach drama at the college here. So tell me something. What's your name? Where are you from?
A lot of questions.
Only two.
I don't mean to seem rude, but it's kind of late for me. Maybe we could do this some other time.
I'm sorry, but I'm not free till tomorrow night. I'm making pot roast for dinner. It'd be great with apple pie.
I'm sure it would.
Look, don't say anything. I'll set two places, 8 o'clock. If you don't show, I'll be eating pot roast for a week. It's no big deal, right?
On his way out, he turns.
Good night.
Good night.
Martin is sitting in his office, working on a computer.
Mr. Burney, you have a call.
I told you to hold my calls.
Yes, I know, but she says she knew your wife.
Put her through. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Burney. My name is Vanessa Shelley.
Yes?
I hope I'm not disturbing you. I just heard about Laura, and I wanted to call and tell you how much we'll miss her.
Thank you. How did you know her?
From the YWCA.
No, you must be speaking of someone else. My wife never went to the YWCA.
No. We took swimming there Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 8 a.m.
Look, there's obviously some mistake. My wife drowned. She couldn't swim.
Well, at first she couldn't, but she became a good swimmer.
I'm sure you have the wrong woman.
This is odd. Mr. Burney, your wife studied gymnastics, didn't she?
No, my wife never studied gymnastics.
That's strange. She told us that's how she got all those terrible bruises. Mr. Burney, I don't understand it. I'm sorry if I've bothered you. This is just so confusing.
He slams an ornament down on his desk in a rage. Now, Martin is speeding along the coast road to his house. Once inside, he opens up a cardboard box labeled Laura's Personal Records. He removes some of the contents, then takes off his trench coat and tosses it aside. Then he opens up a wallet and starts sifting through some of the documents. Time passes and the sky outside has turned pitch black. By now, Martin has spread all of Laura's papers across the bed. As he angrily walks across them, the empty box falls to the floor. Now, he's frantically rifling through her jewelry box and drawers. Like a man possessed, he moves on through the house, ripping off a dust sheet and searching through a vanity unit filled with Laura's things. He tosses the neatly arranged boxes aside and opens up a small makeup bag. Reaching inside, he cuts his finger on something. Seeing blood dripping from his fingertip, he shuffles across the floor on his knees to the toilet bowl. As he lets the blood drip into the water, to his amazement, he sees Laura's wedding ring sitting on the bottom. His brow furrowed with confusion, he lifts the ring up for a closer look. His eyes dart back and forth as he struggles to take in the implications. Then, he places the ring on his little finger next to his own golden band, and his expression changes to one of cold, seething rage. Now, carrying an apple pie, Laura is crossing the short distance between her house and Ben's. She's wearing a simple white dress that's gathered at the waist, and her long tousled hair is hanging loose. She pauses at the screen door.
Shit.
Ben removes a burning casserole from the oven.
Fire department.
He slaps a tea towel against the dish to extinguish the flames.
I hope you like your roast well done.
The tea towel catches fire as well, so he shakes it to put it out.
Come on in. Is that apple?
What else?
Can I get you something? Eye drops, gas mask?
No, thanks.
How about some more music?
I like to chat on.
No, I mean classical, for during dinner.
Sure, I like classical. Anything with Berlioz.
Oh?
Yeah, his Symphony Fantastique gives me the chills.
Oh, really? Thanks for the tip. So I understand you're looking for a job.
Where'd you hear that?
Well, small towns are funny places. Everybody knows everybody. But I know a lot of people over at the college. Could drop in a good word for you if you like.
Why would you do that?
God, such paranoia. Where are you from, New York? Listen, it's no problem. With a few letters of recommendation,
I have letters of recommendation.
Transcripts? Well, come on, you got a driver's license, right?
Look, I really don't want to talk about this, okay? I'm not asking for anything, Ben.
Neither am I.
He sees her cut forehead.
Jesus, that's real.
As he reaches out to her, she turns away and covers it with her hair.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm gonna be.
Listen. There's only one more thing I'm gonna ask. Only one thing I wanna know. Do you have a name?
Sarah Waters.
Well, that's a start.
Now, children on bikes pass by Martin, who's striding along a leafy suburban street with his hands dug into his pockets of his long black coat. He runs a hand through his dark brown hair, then proceeds up a pathway leading to the Oakrest Old People's Home. Now inside.
She spoke so highly of you, quality of care. Laura's mother was so happy here.
Well, it's always nice to hear that. We enjoyed having her with us.
Laura's passing was so sudden, so shocking. I tried to talk to as many of her family, old friends, as I could find. And I thought maybe there were people close to her that I never knew. Perhaps they visited her mother here. You might remember or have records.
Well, I'm afraid we don't keep records on visitors. And you flew here?
Well,
just...
no. I thought Laura might want to be laid to rest here, in whatever place her mother was buried.
So her mother's passed on as well.
6 months ago, her mother died here, in your care.
6 months ago, your wife removed her mother from this institution. She was handicapped, as you know, but otherwise in reasonably good health. Mrs. Burney simply showed up, paid the bill, and collected her mother.
Did she say where she was taking her?
Why, home, of course. To live with you.
He glares at her. Nora finds Ben waiting for her outside the library.
Hi.
Hey.
What are you doing here?
Waiting for you. So how's it going in there? What do they got you doing?
Stacking, filing, overdue books.
You enjoying?
I like it. Thanks for helping me work this out.
Yeah, I saw you in town yesterday. You were going into Walgreens.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I called out your name. You didn't even blink.
Maybe I didn't hear you.
Your name isn't Sarah Waters, is it?
Maybe I didn't hear you.
No, you heard me. Look, I know this is crazy. I hardly know you, really, but I like you. I do. Just
I don't know how to feel what I'm feeling when I don't even know your name.
People never really know each other, Ben.
It doesn't have to be that way. Give it a chance.
I can't. I'm sorry.
What are you afraid of?
What is it with men?
Don't do that. Look, I gotta know. Either honest with each other or it doesn't happen. It just stops right here.
Never started.
She looks him straight in the eye, and with a resigned nod, he steps back. Then he turns and walks away. She stays where she is for a moment before heading off in the opposite direction. Now it's evening, and Laura's on a payphone.
Chloe Williams, please.
Who's calling, please?
A friend of the family.
Just a minute, I'll put you through.
Laura covers the mouthpiece.
Hello? Speak up, please. I can't hear you. Hello?
I miss you, Mom.
Hello? Is anyone there?
I love you.
Hello?
No, I'm okay.
Jane, there's nobody on the line.
Oh, I have so much to tell you.
Did they say who was calling?
See you soon.
Looking upset, she hangs up. Now, Martin is in a private detective's office.
And where was she last seen?
In a nursing home here in Minneapolis.
So you tried there?
6 months ago, she was removed, taken elsewhere. But in her condition, not very far. I'd suggest 2 days' drive at most.
I can put 3 men on it, but it'll cost.
Good. I want this taken very seriously. And if she's found, a $10,000 bonus to the man who does, in cash. And another 10 to you.
A parade is making its way along a wide street in town. 2 Cadillacs with Confederate flag designs cruise past, with beauty queens waving from the back seat. Crowds of spectators are assembled on either side of the road, waving flags and greeting the paraders as they pass. Ben is walking with some friends alongside a group of cheerleaders with red and white pom-poms. He has a little girl on his shoulders who's eating cotton candy. On the other side of the street, Laura is sitting beside some kids. Ben stops in his tracks when he sees her clapping along and enjoying the parade. He's about to head over when he remembers the little girl. He lifts her off his shoulders and deposits her with her parents before weaving through a marching band to Laura. She beams when she sees him.
Hi.
Hi. Yuck.
Yeah, this little girl went nuts with the cotton candy.
Yeah, I saw her. She was beautiful.
And knows it, too. It's good to see you.
Yeah, you too.
I've been feeling kind of funny about the other day.
Let's just forget about it, okay?
Okay.
Now they're strolling through the town.
Heartland, huh?
Have you always lived here?
I lived in New York for a couple years. I tried to be an actor. Closest I ever got to Broadway was Tenant Bar at Sardi's. Sometimes I feel like a failure for coming back here, but other times I think it's the smartest move I ever made.
You know why I came here? To be near my mom. She had a partial stroke 3 years ago. I couldn't care for her.
How is she now?
I don't know. I haven't seen her. I haven't gone there yet.
Why not?
I'm not sure it's safe.
Now in a nursing home, Laura's elderly mom is sitting by herself, crocheting. Her blindness means she has to feel around for the crochet needle she's just dropped on the floor. Martin is standing just inches from her hand, staring down at her with blood-curdling intensity. Having retrieved her hook, the old lady happily resumes her needlework, oblivious to his ominous presence. Nighttime. and as Laura makes her way up the front path to her house, someone is watching her from the bushes nearby. Inside, the house is in darkness. She hangs up her coat in the hallway.
Sierra?
Ben?
Yeah, it's me. I'm sorry, did I scare you?
I'm just a little on edge.
Look, I want you to come with me.
Come with you where? Ben? Ben, where are you?
A spotlight glows in pitch darkness. Laura is standing in the pool of light on a stage. A trapeze-style swing is lowered beside her.
Go ahead, jump on.
She walks over, grabs the ropes on either side, then lowers herself onto the swing. Ben is sitting at a control desk at the back of the room. Laura looks about her and smiles. Suddenly, the stage's backdrop transforms into a twinkling starry night. Ben hits a button, and a flurry of fake snow falls from the ceiling. Laura stands and walks amongst the white flakes that are floating down all around her. She holds out her hands to catch them, and Ben smiles. Her tousled long auburn hair is now speckled with white. Now in a dressing room, Laura's trying on different costumes in front of a mirror. She shimmies across the floor, wearing just a black suit jacket and black pantyhose. Ben stands watching her with a smile. Now wearing a black top hat, she pulls it down over her face, takes it off with a flourish and throws it at him. Now he's helping her try on hats. A wide-brimmed pink creation, a Middle Eastern headdress that makes her laugh, then a cowboy hat, which he pulls off. Later, as she gets changed behind a screen, he watches her with a smile from a discreet distance. Back with her hats, she tries on a silver knight's helmet. Now the pair are juggling balls. He throws one at her, and she tries to catch it in the voluminous clown's pants that she's wearing. Dressed as a dandy, she struggles with a floppy neckerchief bow. Now she's being a bit more choosy with the hats he's trying to put on her head. A Robin Hood hat, a sailor's cap, and a princess's headdress. She dodges a sparkly headband, then sticks her tongue out through a grotesque theatre mask. Ben waggles his tongue at her. Her enjoyment is obvious from the wide smile on her face. He puts on a tape. Laura's putting all the costumes back. He goes over, places her hand on his shoulder, and maneuvers her into a dancing position before leading her gently across the floor. They turn into a space that's surrounded by all the costumes she's been trying on. With a dramatic flourish, they sway in time to the music. As they speed up, swinging and jiving, they're reflected in three mirrors. He twirls her back and forth under his arm. Then holding hands, they spin each other round quickly. She goes flying off into another area, and he chases after her. After a series of fast twirls, they roll under each other's arms repeatedly. Wise, Then holding her by the waist, he spins her around so quickly, her feet leave the ground. Later, she twirls into her house. She beams at him as he steps up close to her. The moment becomes more intimate as they shuffle slowly around in a circle, their faces inches apart. Then, tentatively, their lips meet for a tender kiss. Still turning, they wrap their arms around each other tightly as their kiss becomes more passionate. He gently pushes her backwards towards the stairs. As they lie down on the lower steps, their kissing continues. She arches her back towards him as his lips travel down her body. But when she opens her eyes, her expression changes to one of fear.
Then stop. No, stop, please, I can't. It's not right. Stop. Stop it! Stop it! I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Sarah. God, what did he do to you?
Please, God. Please.
Sarah, please.
Please, oh God, Ben, please. I'm sorry, but you have to go.
Her eyes are filled with tears, and she's deliberately not looking at him. After a moment, he turns and sadly walks away. Badly shaken, she sits down on the stairs and leans against the wall. Her hand nervously flits about her face. The next day, Ben is sitting in quiet contemplation on the chair swing on his front porch. Wearing jeans and a white blouse, Laura emerges from her house next door and strolls over to him. He turns and sees her approaching, but looks away. She comes up to his front steps, then slowly makes her way over to the swing. He doesn't look at her. When she takes a seat next to him, he removes his feet from the balustrade they've been resting on. Nervously, she folds her hands in her lap.
What you said is right. I had a husband. And he hurt me. I guess I'm just really afraid.
What?
I'm never getting my life back together.
Just feels like that. Someday you might surprise yourself.
I'm glad you're here.
Me too.
She leans against him and he kisses her head. Then they swing back and forth on the chair in the gentle sunshine. Next, Ben's fitting a fake moustache on Laura.
Hold still.
I am holding still.
Your mouth, keep it shut.
It was tickling me.
Okay. Hold that front there.
Here?
Yeah.
He puts a short, brown-haired man's wig on her. Then she picks up a mirror to check the results.
Oh, Ben, that looks great.
Even your mother won't recognize you.
My mother will recognize me.
Now, a white convertible with its top down is making its way along a country road. Later, Laura, who's disguised as a man, turns the car into the driveway of her mother's nursing home. Patients and staff dressed in white are milling around. Once inside, she makes her way along a corridor wearing a baseball cap.
Can I help you, sir?
Yeah, I'm looking for the restroom, man.
It's right around the corner there.
Laura nods, then wanders off. Her mother is sitting tracing her fingers across the pages of Braille in a book when Laura enters the room.
Jane? Is that you, Jane?
Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Mom's gonna buy you a monkey
bird. Laura, you're here.
Hi, Mom. Hi. You look wonderful.
What?
Oh. It's a disguise.
She peels off her moustache.
Are you all right?
I left him, Mom. It just became so terrible. But I'm all right now, and we're gonna be fine. You look so beautiful. Oh, it's a wig.
Is she looking for you?
I don't think so. But I'm not sure.
God, what did he do?
Doesn't matter now.
You'll be okay alone?
Yeah, I'm okay. I got a job. Making my own money, and I have a friend.
A man.
He's nice, Mom. He teaches drama at the college in Cedar Falls.
It's been hard for you. Honey, you're gonna be fine. Inside, you always were. There's nothing Martin or any man can do or say to take that away. You have yourself.
Thanks, Mom.
With a happy, tearful smile, Laura leans forward to hug her mom tightly. Her mom is in a wheelchair, with Laura crouching beside her. They remain clinging to each other for a long while, before finally pulling apart. Now Martin is drinking from a water fountain. After a few gulps, he pats his mouth with a handkerchief, then proceeds down the nursing home corridor. He stops by a member of staff who's pinning something to a notice board.
Excuse me. I wonder if you could help me.
I can try.
My younger sister used to work for the lady in room 14. She's returning to this area, and I know she'll want to visit Mrs. Williams.
And you'd like to leave a message for her?
Well, the thing is, my sister married someone the family didn't approve of, really. We grew apart. I was wrong to let that happen.
Behind him, Laura fetches a towel, then returns to her mom's room.
I want to surprise her. What I need is someone just to let me know she's here. Someone I can trust to keep a secret. Here's my name and motel number. It would sure mean a lot to me.
I'd be glad to help.
Thanks.
He turns around and walks into Laura's mom's room. Laura's not there.
Jane, I...
Martin leaves, and Laura returns.
Mom, who are you talking to?
Nobody, I guess.
Here's your medicine. Hold that your
hand. Martin is walking at a steady pace along a corridor. A short distance away, Laura is making her way down an adjoining corridor, heading right towards him. Just before their paths cross, he's momentarily distracted by the woman he was talking to earlier. Unaware, Laura turns her back on him, bending to take a drink from the fountain, but he stops right behind, waiting to take a drink himself. Laura finishes, but has to bash the button to make the fountain go off. When she finally moves away and Martin takes her place, he gets a jet of water in his eye. Angry, he pats his face, then heads towards the exit, with Laura just ahead of him.
Excuse me, sir. Won't be a minute. Okay. Yeah, I'll call you later. Bye-bye. You asked me about Chloe Williams' visitors. Well, for 6 months, not one. And suddenly today...
A young woman.
A young man. A little mustache. Well, he just walked out that door.
Martin bolts out of the building, nearly crashing into someone in a wheelchair, but there's no sign of Laura. In fading daylight, an ecstatic Laura turns her car into her driveway. She's no longer in disguise. She runs over to Ben's house and leaps into his arms.
Did you see her?
God, it was perfect. Oh, she looks so beautiful. Nobody suspected a thing. I felt so safe.
You are safe. You are.
She smiles and they kiss. Back at the home, Laura's mom is sitting up in bed eating her dinner when Martin enters her room and closes the door.
Will you let me help you with your supper? It does look delicious.
Who are you?
My name is Darryl Walker, ma'am. I'm a police officer.
Oh, am I under arrest?
No, I just have some questions. Shall we start with some steak?
He feeds her a forkful.
You had a visitor yesterday.
Yes, my nephew. He's from Wisconsin.
Good girl. Laura should be proud of you. Carrots. We have to get word to her, ma'am. The Boston police have called us. They say her husband is in this area. We think he wants to harm her. So if she calls, you have her ring the police at Sioux City and ask.
She won't call, not till Sunday, she said.
That's a long time.
He's a crazy man.
I know that. He's very dangerous. Help us find him, Chloe. For God's sake. We have to warn him.
I don't know where.
Think! Is she with someone? A man, perhaps? Someone we could contact?
He teaches dramatics.
Where?
At a college in Cedar Falls.
Thank you, Chloe.
Holding up a pillow, he approaches the bed.
Help her.
He steps closer.
Please.
Excuse me, Chloe. It's time for your medicine.
Here you go, Chloe. Don't worry.
He puts the pillow behind her back, then walks out. Now, outside college, a smartly dressed young man with neatly trimmed hair is making his way to the parking lot. He gets out his keys and lets himself into his car, where he deposits his briefcase and jacket on the passenger seat. Suddenly, Martin grabs him by the neck from behind and sticks a gun in his face.
Where is she? Please don't let me ask again.
I don't know.
My wife. She's only my wife. Wonderful fuck, isn't she?
Esther, you've got the wrong guy.
That would be disappointing. I hate to be wrong.
Why? Why does it have to be me?
Because you teach in drama.
Oh, Jesus God, there must be half a dozen.
It's you.
No, you don't understand. I live with another man. Ask anyone.
If you tell anyone, you tell the police. You and your gentleman friend.
He pistol whips him, knocking him out cold. Soon after, Martin is walking across a lawn where some college boys are playing around with a ball. Now, in Ben's drama class.
Stay with me, Nina. I implore you, or let me go with you.
Okay, good. Come on down for a second. One thing we can't forget is Trepliff hasn't seen Nina in like 2 years, so when he gets her in the room, he wants her to stay, you know what I mean? Nina, I cursed you. I hated you. I tore up all your letters and photographs, but every minute I was conscious that my soul was bound to yours forever. I can never stop loving you. Ever since I lost you, my life has been unbearable. I'm miserable. I call to you, I kiss the ground you walked on. Wherever I look, I see your face. I am alone. I've no one's affection to warm me. I'm as cold as if I were living in a dungeon, and no matter what I write, it's dry, hard, dark.
Martin is spying on him from the shadows.
Let me go with you.
ever loved someone that much?
Yeah.
Later, Ben's leaving the college. Unaware he's being watched, he walks down the front pathway to the road, where his white convertible is parked, tosses his briefcase on a seat, then gets in. The red brake lights come on briefly, then he drives away, oblivious to the car pulling out to follow him. Now, the spectacular multicolored neon lights of a funfair in full swing illuminate the night sky. Ben goes over to chat to a woman at the carnival entrance. A few meters away, with only his wedding ring hand showing, Martin buys a ticket at a kiosk. He's still wearing Laura's wedding ring on his little finger. Now Ben is making his way through the crowds, unaware that the shadowy figure of Martin is stalking him. Moving deeper into the bustling fairground, Ben finally spots Laura, standing lost in thought. When he touches her, she jumps, but then smiles. As they stand happily chatting, they're oblivious to Martin, who's nearby watching them, his face bathed in the eerie red light emanating from a ride. Laura is grinning from ear to ear, looking more happy and relaxed than ever before. In contrast, Martin's face is stony and threatening. His unblinking eyes are boring right into her, but she remains blissfully unaware. Then she and Ben move off. Martin continues to stalk them from the ground as they take a ride on a Ferris wheel. With his face in the shadows, his eyes never leave them as they spin round and round, sitting cozily close together. The chair revolves, making Laura laugh and scream. Martin stands still, staring up at them. The pink and blue lights of a ride spin round behind him. Laura and Ben are now kissing on the moving wheel. Never blinking, Martin's eyes bore into their intimate embrace. Martin stands completely still, looking up at his wife, totally oblivious to all the carnival goers jostling around him. Later, Ben and Laura arrive outside her house.
So, give me 20 minutes, I just want to freshen up.
Sure.
Oh, can I bring you anything?
Just you. And leave your friends at home.
I won't take long.
She lets herself in. Later, Laura is lying in the tub with the bathroom door wide open. Her long wet hair is slicked back, and she has one knee bent, sticking out of the water. Lost in thought, something makes her smile. Then as she runs her hand through her hair, her expression changes. Three towels are neatly folded in a line on the rail. She immediately gets out of the water, grabs her white robe from a door hook and puts it on. Then looking shell-shocked, she walks briskly into her bedroom. Satisfied there's no one there, she opens the door to another room. She peers into the darkness, then closes the door. Next, she hurries down the stairs into the softly lit hall and puts a light on in a room. She checks the living room across the hall. Finding a door that's ajar, she swings it open and switches on the light. It's a closet, and it's empty. Now she puts on the kitchen light and enters the room. Her eyes widen when she sees that two tea towels have been neatly aligned on a rail. She turns and opens a food cupboard. A relieved smile crosses her face when she sees the jumble of tins and packets inside. She moves out of the kitchen along the hallway and is about to head back up the stairs. She goes to investigate the noise. A window is flapping in the wind. Relieved, she goes to close it and sees a figure reflected in the glass behind her.
I'm sorry. Are you okay?
Saying goodbye to old ghosts, you know. What are you doing here?
It's all set. Come on, get dressed.
Okay.
I'll see you out there.
Ben and Laura lounge on a rug thrown on the grass, the remnants of a picnic scattered about them. Surrounded by the dark, a group of candles throw out a soft, warm glow that illuminates their faces. Laura is relaxed and chatty. They blow out the candles, get up from their late-night feast, and head back to the house.
You want to do something tomorrow?
Yeah, sure. I had a really good time tonight.
Me too.
He leans in and kisses her. Someone is watching them through the trees.
Tomorrow.
Ben leaves, and Laura heads up the steps and disappears inside. She leans against the kitchen door as she closes it, a smile on her face. Laura then takes out a couple of slices of bread and puts them in the toaster. Outside her window, someone is spying on her. Laura walks into the living room and turns on the stereo before heading upstairs. The music stops her in her tracks, but then she smiles and carries on. Now in her bedroom, she turns her head to listen. Water is running over the bath. She goes to investigate and turns off the tap. Sitting on the edge of the bath, she pushes her hand into the water and pulls out the plug. Drying her hands on a towel, she returns to the bedroom. She notices her closet door is ajar. Slowly, she edges towards the closet and reaches for the handle. She rushes back downstairs into the kitchen, where the toaster is spilling out flames and smoke. She wrenches the plug from the socket. She grabs a broom and starts wafting it below the smoke alarm on the hall ceiling. It doesn't respond, so she turns the broom around and bashes the alarm with the handle. She dumps the broken alarm into the kitchen bin. As she turns, she spots three neatly aligned tea towels, then quickly turns to look at the food cupboard on the other side of the room. Illuminated only by the dim light from outside shining through the window, she gingerly heads towards the cupboard, stops, and hesitates by the doors. She wrenches them open to reveal all the cans in regimented rows, the labels facing outwards. Her face crumples and she backs away. She runs from the kitchen and stops dead in front of the stereo. Her face suddenly becomes still.
Hello, Princess.
Martin is behind her. He kisses the back of her head.
It's the first touch after so long apart. Have you been thinking of it too?
Laura squeezes her eyes shut.
Sarah? You there?
Martin puts his hand over her mouth.
I'll kill him.
Can you hear me?
Just a second.
Still behind her, Martin advances Laura to the door. He has a gun in his hand. Slowly, he reaches out and attaches the security chain, then moves over to the other side. Laura opens the door.
Hey.
Hi.
It's tomorrow. 12:05. I couldn't wait.
Ben, I'm just so tired.
Still spooked by ghosts, huh?
They're all around me.
How about I come in?
It's really not a good time, okay?
Well, later then. Good night, Sarah.
Good night.
He doesn't matter. He's nothing, Laura. Nothing.
Ben bursts through the door and jumps on Martin's back, trying to grab the gun. But Martin smashes him into the wall, then elbows him in the stomach. Laura watches helplessly.
Fuck you.
Martin smashes the gun butt into Ben's face, and he collapses in a heap.
What's his name?
He points the gun at Ben.
Ben. Martin.
He doesn't have anything to do with us, does he, Princess? Does he?
No.
Remember our honeymoon. The night I taught you to dance.
With a gun pressed in her back, he holds her close and makes her dance, turning on the spot.
Of course you haven't forgotten. You said those were the happiest days of your whole life. Remember this?
Her wedding ring.
This is yours, Laura. We are one. We will always be one. Nothing can keep us apart.
She knees him in the groin, and the gun is sent flying. She makes a dash for it, but he grabs her legs and trips her. She crashes down, but crawls towards the gun. Lying on her back, she fires off a shot.
I'm impressed.
Laura gets to her feet.
Now let's end this while you're still ahead.
Come to me, Martin. Walk this way.
Always my pleasure.
She's shaking, making the gun wobble.
That's Varna.
Oh, I don't think so. Here feels right. There's the telephone. You could call the police. I know your every thought, Laura. You're wondering if they can protect you. Who knows? They may issue an order instructing me to stay away from my own wife. Nothing can keep me away. I love you, Laura.
She shakes her head.
I can't live without you. And I won't let you live without me.
Her eyes drop briefly to the phone. Then, with the gun still aimed at Martin, she reaches down to pick it up.
Think carefully.
Crouching, she dials, the gun still wobbling in her hand.
Just give me the police. Hurry, please.
This is our last chance.
Yes, this is Sarah Waters, 408 Tremont.
Take that chance.
Come quickly. I've just killed an intruder.
His eyes narrow, and Laura stands. The shot hits him in the chest, but he doesn't fall. The impact sends him crashing down, but almost instantly he's back on his feet. The third shot ricochets him off the wall. Still, he advances. Mouth agape, he reaches out to Laura, then finally falls. Laura drops the gun, and her face crumples in tears. She sinks to the floor on her knees, next to Martin's body. She buries her head in her hands, her body racked by her sobs. Her pale dress spills around her, like a small halo in the dark. Martin grabs her hair. Maniacal eyes stare out of his bloodied face. The gun is aimed and nearly touching her face. It begins to wobble. It's empty. His mad stare still holds her, but then his hand slides from her hair, and he slumps down, dropping the gun. Laura reaches out to the wall to raise herself up, and walks over to the still prone body of Ben. He He stirs, and she kneels beside him, stroking his hair. Slowly, he manages to raise himself up onto his elbow, then embraces her tightly. Locked in each other's arms, they gently rock together. In the darkened stair hallway, Martin's body lies motionless, his arms stretched out across the polished wooden floor, his hand streaked with blood. He's still wearing his wedding ring, and just beyond his fingertips, out of reach forever, lies Laura's abandoned wedding ring, glinting in the dim light.